Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about the foods of Adventure Time.
Yes!
Yeah, come on, grab your friends!
Virtually, Lauren, I'm reaching out to you.
Oh, yeah!
Yes, yes, and we're really excited about this one. It was such a delight to research. It's funny
because... Oh my goodness, yeah.
We were trying to narrow down. We had it between this one and SpongeBob, what was going to be our next fictional foods. And I was like, well, Lauren's got more expertise in Adventure Time. I've got more expertise in SpongeBob. What does the internet say? I was like, okay, seems like, you know, Adventure Time will be more concise. Like, there's a lot out there, but it's kind of like, you know, in a bubble. And then there was just so much stuff, and it was also fun, and I wanted to talk about all of it.
All of it.
It was hard to condense. It was hard to condense this one.
Yeah, I could be still right now, and probably for at least the runtime of that entire series, just be making little notes about every single instance of a meal or a sandwich or a fruit that talks to you in the entire thing. And it could just keep going. And I would be delighted by it, but I'm not sure if that's what y'all would want to listen to.
Well, we'll put that in the back of our back of our heads, you know. Maybe we'll come back and do that.
Yeah. Savor runs out of material, and then it just becomes the episode-by-episode Foods of Adventure Time show.
Oh, yes. Well, a lot of listeners have written in about this one, so we know there's some Adventure Time fans in the audience. As I've said, I've done one watch through of Adventure Time. Some of the episodes I've seen more than once, but I've done like one big watch through of what was available at the time. And I think I was doing this in 2014.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
Okay, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm. And it was a lot. At the time, it was a lot of material. And I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was really weird and beautiful and quirky and fun and often poignant and sad. Lauren and I were discussing this beforehand, but there were certain episodes where I was like upset.
Yeah. That's kind of, I mean, it's what I love about this show. And it's what sometimes makes me step away from this show because it's ostensibly a children's show for children, but definitely like makes me cry like at least one every, I don't know, 5 or 10 episodes. Definitely, like makes me more upset than the like horror media that I watch.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is more horrifying than like slasher horror a lot of the time.
There's definitely something about the medium of it being, a children's show and having that sort of animation style and kind of a general, like, sweet but very weird, like, anything could happen at any time vibe that is, I think, delivering something that is upsetting or potentially even disturbing through that medium does make it more impactful.
Yeah, because I don't know, like I guess you're watching it and like your disbelief is suspended and you're just in this open place and then it really slaps you with something and it's like, oh no, oh, I didn't realize that this was about my feelings. Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, and I'm actually, like, that's something I think a lot of times people forget and creators forget is children do have, they experience these emotions and they feel these things. And I think a lot of times we dismiss them. And so as an adult to be like, oh, it's just a children's show. I'm going to go watch it. And then at least for me, sometimes I'll be in like, oh yeah, I remember, you know, like watching stuff like this as a kid or being in this place as a kid. And then you're like, oh yeah, this really scared me as a kid or like these kind of things.
Yeah. And it also really speaks to the truth of being an adult. I feel like in a way really jealous of kids who got to grow up with like this and Steven Universe and all these other really beautiful shows that were doing like kind of subversive stuff that just really had a lot of good solid life lessons about how to be and how to work out what that is. And I don't know, it's really nice.
It is, and quite weird.
So weird. Oh my heck.
Mm-hmm.
But so we are not the only humans to feel this deeply about it, right? Like a lot of you have written in. There's a lot of ink on the digital ink about it on the internet. Also, some really good scholarly works. Shout out right here at the top to this this academic book written by one Paul A. Thomas and published for free by the University of Kansas Libraries in 2020, called "Exploring the Land of Oo: An Unofficial Overview and Production History of Cartoon Network's Adventure Time."
Yes, love it.
Yeah, I like discovered. I was like, oh, it's this like 332 page book. I'm sure it's going to cost like academic book prices. And then it was like, you can read it right now. And I was like, oh my heck.
Well, I guess I will.
I guess I shall.
But I guess that brings us to our question.
Mm-hmm.
Adventure Time. What is it?
Well, Adventure Time is a franchise based on a cartoon series, again, ostensibly for children, that aired on Cartoon Network originally from 2010 through 2018 and was created by one Pendleton Ward. In 2006, Ward pitched a pilot just out of school to an animation studio called Frederator, which eventually went viral on the internet, and then Frederator pitched it to Cartoon Network, which picked it up. Its episodes are, for the most part, just 11 minutes long and fairly self-contained. There are a few multi-parters, and the lore does build as the series goes on and explores the backstories of the characters and the world and worlds that they live in. All of this is further explored throughout the rest of the franchise, comic books and graphic novels, other books, a series of short films that have been releasing on streaming over the past year, video games, downloadable content in other franchises' video games, a collectible card game, a Lego set, and on and on. And there is not only that aforementioned academic work, there's also another book by one Nicholas Michaud called Adventure Time and Philosophy, The Handbook for Heroes. I have not picked that one up, but I'm very curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of weird things have happened with this series because of how popular it got. Like in 2013, there was a high-speed rail train in Taiwan that got wrapped with Cartoon Network characters, including main characters Finn and Jake at the head and the tail of the train. It's not really part of the franchise. I just wanted to point out that this got to be like a big thing.
Oh, yeah. It was one of my... Every time I go to Dragon Con or a similar convention, I have a couple of games that I do, which I believe I've discussed on here. But one of them is normally I count how many Jane hats from Firefly I see.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But it became also Finn hats.
Finn hats, yeah.
But then also Bob's Burgers, her hat.
Oh, yeah. Aww. Yeah.
I love it. I'm like,
oh gosh. Yeah, those are three really solid costume choices for a nice, easy, like, oh man, I get that reference costume that right. Just brings me joy whenever I see it in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
And also beyond a casual costume, I do have a friend who did a really brilliant Fiona and Cake costume.
Oh,
she went as Fiona, and she makes puppets. She made the Lauren puppet that I have in my office. If y'all have never seen this, I'll try to remember to post a picture somewhere. But yeah, she made a puppet me, and it looks really uncannily like me, and it scares my roommates when they walk by.
It's pretty awesome.
But yeah, super, super cool. Anyway, I guess I should explain for anyone who's just so confused right now what the show is kind of about. The show is basically about a pair of friends, adopted brothers, Jake the dog and Finn the human, who fight evil and have fun in a fantastical, if like post-apocalyptic world called the Land of Oo, where humans are all but extinct. Magic and monsters exist. There are a lot of kingdoms run by a lot of royalty. And like every fairy tale trope and bit of normative Western narrative logic that you've ever encountered is guaranteed pretty much to get turned on its head in some kind of hilarious, surrealistic, absurdist way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one of those ones where when we were typing it out or when I'm thinking of how to explain it, it just sounds so wild.
Oh, yeah. Reading serious journalists write about this series made me so happy.
Me too.
Because the sentences that they write are just so completely like all of those are words, but none of them have ever been strung together in quite that way before.
Right. And I think that for you, the listener, you will get to hear some of those mm-hmm. that we ourselves have tried to compose.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. I should put in that Jake is not like a dog. Like Jake is like a anthropomorphic dog that mm-hmm. also shapeshifts, and not like shapeshifts like, oh, like I can look like Matt Damon, like it shapeshifts like, or he, I'm sorry. Jake shapeshifts to grow in size or shrink in size. His body's kind of made of weird rubber flesh, can expand and contract in all kinds of weird ways. And he can fly or jump really far, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, one interesting problem that I have is I seem to always mix up names of characters on shows.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I always get Rick and Morty mixed up. I always get Jake and Finn mixed up. So I spent a lot of this really confused. I was like, I thought that was, I don't know why that is, but I.
I mistyped Jake versus Finn a lot in this outline, but we're working it all out.
We are.
Okay, so yes, The other than Jake the dog, the other main character is Finn the human, and he's a kid, or a preteen. He's 12 years old when the show starts. The voice actor Jeremy Shatta was actually 12 years old when the series started, and Finn, and the actor age as the show goes on in nearly real time. And the series, you know, is really about all of these characters growing and growing up and growing together or apart or, you know, combinations of both. Like, as weird and pop culture-y and nerdy as the show can be, there's just so much heart. It's really sweet. The creation process was storyboard-driven, which is how, like Disney films and other classic hand-drawn animations were made. And I think it's just really like the cinching creative point that lets shows like this or media like this merge the art and the script so that both can be just as heckin' wild as possible.
And it gets wild.
It is. It is. Yeah. It also incorporates a lot of music. Over the course of the series, guest animators were welcomed in to do episodes in different styles, even in different media. The series is often called groundbreaking and compared with other shows that were airing during the 2010s that really redefined what television could be and like ushered in like the modern era of TV being just as critically acclaimed as film.
Yeah. It's definitely got a really distinct feel and look and just the whole thing going.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Yes. Well, what about the nutrition?
Don't eat TV shows.
Don't eat TV. I feel like there's some, you know, like 50s waving of fist at kids like it'll rot your brains, kids.
I mean, we do consume TV, but anyway. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, aside from that, mm-hmm. as you said, Lauren, food does play a really significant role in the show, whether it's characters like the food boys, the candy people, which are basically a people of sentient treats, the hamburger and hot dog monsters, honey man, pizza fish, and then the slew of princesses named after foods like strudel princess, breakfast princess, peanut princess, wildberry princess, and frozen yogurt princess. And then you've got locations like the Breakfast Kingdom, Candy Kingdom, Cotton Candy Forest, Mushroom Village, and the Witch's Garden. And then you've got various dishes and drinks. There is an entire episode dedicated to the food chain.
Oof.
People have written about that one.
Oof. That one, yes. That's one of the ones that I watched in preparation for this recording, and I had forgotten. I had forgotten.
Mm-hmm. To me, it feels like, at times, it feels like a weirder, stranger, scarier Candyland in animated cartoon form.
I feel like that has to be one of the influences. Like, it's definitely playing on a lot of the, like 80s nostalgia for stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And right, although there are relatively conventional foods in this world, there are also some really fantastical things, like that witch's garden, where donut shrubs and cupcake flowers grow. You can plant candy seeds to grow more candy. One of the main characters is Princess Bubblegum. She is made of bubblegum. Her body is made of bubblegum. She is sentient bubblegum. she's primarily a scientist, okay, but, like, she also has some magical food-related powers. She can turn inanimate candy into sentient creatures. And, like, just for example, like, there's once cause for her to gleefully utter the line after the tsunami of root beer is unleashed upon a city. All of that root beer came from inside my body!
Oh, I love it.
this is the kind of thing. This is why I love this show, because, like, my roommate and I were watching this, and, like, we had watched the episode where this happens. It's in the film series Distant Lands, which is out on HBO Max right now. It's in the episode about Bubblegum and Marceline, and we had watched it maybe like 3 times already, and we were just rewatching it for no reason, and we noticed that line for the first time. And we were laughing so hard that we had to stop the episode and laugh more and then, like, get back into the episode and then stop it again because we were still laughing.
I love it. I mean, that's a sign of a good piece of entertainment to me, where you can see it, like, multiple times and still somehow you're like, how did I miss this?
This is so fantastic. Yeah. It's just, like, a lot is going on in the moment. Like, I think it was only because we had the captions on that we noticed it. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Hoofta. But no. Okay, so thank you for going on that journey with me. I appreciate you. The characters in Adventure Time do spend a lot of screen time eating and drinking. Like, for a show about adventures, it's also very, very grounded in the daily realities of, like, needing food and sleep and a home and friendship.
Yeah.
Back on the topic of adventures, though, there is also a lot in there about... yes, the food chain. And certainly there are a lot of creatures in the land of Oo that would eat our heroes given a sliver of a chance. A lot of episode plots center around either a character trying to eat something or trying not to be eaten by something.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
fair.
Or about sharing food with friends, as in, like, potlucks and other parties and, like, normal old home meals, or just, like, absentmindedly snacking on trail mix like you do when you're one of the major villains of the series, just, like, trying to get that last little yogurt chip out from the bottom of the container.
Mm-hmm. Can all relate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're not kidnapping princesses, sometimes you're eating trail mix.
That's right. I think that's his slogan.
Scarcity is also dealt with sometimes, especially in flashback episodes to the more, like, mid-apocalyptic times.
And there's an official cookbook, the Adventure Time Official Cookbook by Jordan Grosser with contributor Christopher Hastings, which was released in hardcover in 2016.
And the plot line of the cookbook is that Finn finds this old cookbook that seems to have belonged to his mother, in the Founders Island Library. But lots of the pages are damaged or missing, so Finn and his friends fill it out with their own creations. there's also an unofficial cookbook, Eating Oo, Recipes and Art Inspired by Pendleton Ward's Adventure Time, by Eric Resnick, that was published in 2014.
And Cartoon Network has partnered with some restaurants for some Adventure Time foods, including the Australian shop Donut Time, for their Almost Adventure Time donuts made with maple syrup and topped with caramelized bacon pancakes.
Yep. yep. At the Cartoon Network Hotel in Pennsylvania, there are a bunch of Adventure Time themed foods and drinks on the menu, Jake's Ultimate Cheesy Nachos, Flame Kingdom Wings, Chili of the Nidosphere, Marceline's Salad of Scarlet, and Everything Burrito. A hamburger monster, and for dessert, a Lady Rainicorn flight of ice cream, or a nice slice of cheesecake.
I love this. Listeners, if anyone's been, oh my goodness. It's so good.
Apparently the pool there is called the Land of Pool. I'm like, oh no.
All right. I like it. We do have some numbers for you.
Yeah. At the height of Adventure Time's viewership while it was airing, it was drawing, I didn't mean the pun, but it's right there. It was drawing some 3 million viewers per week. The series won 8 primetime Emmys, at least one per year starting in 2013, and snagged nominations from its first season on for a total of 16 nominations. Other awards include 19 Annie nominations and 3 wins, and the Annies are animation awards, 4 British Academy Children's nominations, 2 wins, a whole bunch of other stuff. There are 57 princesses in the Land of Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Special number.
Yeah. And according to YouGov, it is the 505th most popular TV show of all time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's been well received by both critics and audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the food is a big part of that.
Oh, it is. It's like we talk about so frequently in these fictional foods episodes. The foods are really used to make the characters relatable.
Yes.
And to ground everything in the type of reality. Like, it's so, like, heck and wacky so much of the time. But then they're eating breakfast together and you're like, oh, man, I can relate to that.
Yeah. And a lot of the foods on here, like, they're funny. And you can, like, relate to memories that you have or people you have in your life that is, like, really love sandwiches or something, which we're going to get into.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yes. But first, we're going to pause for a quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. Okay. The setting for Adventure Time is the Land of Ooh, and this is Earth, some 1,000 years or so after a nuclear apocalypse. Humans, right, are all but extinct, and the peoples that inhabit the planet are largely sentient snacks and plants and fire and animals and mythical animals and video game systems and lumps. There's some demons in there. I don't know. Like, the 4 elements in this world are ice, fire, candy, and slime.
Oh, no.
And food is pretty omnipresent, both as food and as characters. Most of the sentient foods are anthropomorphic. There is also a whole village of sentient fruits and vegetables and, like, marshmallows and sausages that look like normal foods, though. Like, they're not anthropomorphic. They do not appear to the viewer to speak, but the other characters all interact with them as though they are speaking. It's called Veggie Village. One time they host a technology fair. I don't know.
That's fantastic. I love it.
And Ooze inhabitants do grow food, but there's also a supply chain of sorts, including, like, grocery/convenience stores like the Squeeze E-Mart, and packaged products like noodle packets and freeze-dried coffee, stuff like that. Penn Ward has cited his influences in creating the show as things like Ren and Stimpy, Beavis and Butthead, and Dungeons and Dragons. And he said that his method of plot development was basically like role play, just like seeing where the characters took him and his co-creators working on the show. And that just makes a lot of sense.
Yep. The second you said Dungeons and Dragons, I was like, yeah, I was really picking up on that vibe. Of like
heavy D&D vibes in this show.
Yes. Oh, yes. So we did want to touch on some specific key foods and drinks and moments in this show's long run. So, yes, it was hard to narrow down. A lot of them are kind of like one sentence or, like, I don't want to say throwaway, but a very brief joke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some of it will be just like, right, right. It's like a second on the screen and then it's gone and it's still right. So until we do that just episode by episode podcast series about every single food that's ever appeared in Adventure Time, here's some of the key ones.
Yes. Starting with bacon pancakes.
Of which course.
Probably, yes, one of the most well-known and well-loved foods from Adventure Time, IRL. They first appeared in the episode Burning Low, and we see Jake preparing them over the stove while singing a song. Bacon pancakes, making bacon pancakes. Take some bacon, I'll put it on a pancake. Bacon pancakes, that's what it's gonna make. Bacon pancake. Thank you. I hope I don't get sued. I actually, like, I'd heard of bacon pancakes. Some of you listeners wrote in about bacon pancakes. I'd clearly seen the episode, but I didn't really remember the song, so I was looking at it for this. And I immediately, like, I haven't had to look it up again. It is that catchy.
Oh, yeah.
I just know it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I this is something that just very occasionally will float through my head apropos of nothing.
Right, right. And it is a pretty big, it's a banger. Hugh Jackman did a dub smash of it that you can find. You can find, like, you know, hour-long loops of different mixes of it. Oh, it's kind of an internet meme.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and it's in the cookbooks that you can find, this is very simple to make. Andrew Ray of Binging with Babish made these for a special on, he did this whole special on the Food of Adventure Time. And yeah, it was pretty easy. It was pretty much like pancakes, bacon on top.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. But I'm not good at making pancakes, so.
Oh.
It might be beyond my reach. Or goals. You know,
we can, yeah, pancake goals. We've got this.
Pancake goals, yes. There are also Finn cakes, which are just small cookies in the shape of the character Finn. Finn makes them and typically doesn't allow anyone else to eat them. They are made of chocolate cake batter, chocolate and vanilla frosting, and marshmallows to make the face.
The face? Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here's a fun one. Prismo's handmade artisanal pickles.
Okay, this is going to take a couple of layers.
Yeah, this is a couple of layers. Okay, first things first, Prismo. Prismo is a two-dimensional manifestation of an old man's dream and also a wishmaster.
Yep.
Yep.
Completely All right. straightforward.
That's as simple as I could make it. Some wishes, of course, go awry. And Finn, you know, of course, unleashes a devastating evil.
As you do.
As you do. When given the option to come to Finn's aid, Jake decides instead to take a moment and eat a sandwich with some of Prismo's pickles. he loves sandwiches, which we're going to get into in a second.
Yeah.
Later on, we learn that eating the pickles in certain circumstances can cause some not so great things, like eating them before bed can lead to strange dreams, and eating them while Prismo is dead can create a time paradox.
Oh, no.
Yep. Finn and Jake do a ritual for a deceased Prismo that involves dancing around the jar of pickles and, quote, mouth-loving the last pickle. That sets off some timey-wimey stuff and eventually brings Prismo back to life.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yeah, but as you said, this does remind me a lot of when we did our Dungeons & Dragons campaign, and I had this thing called the Moral Compass and this other thing called Nova, but essentially it's just wild magic in that world where you kind of roll the dice and could be anything.
It could be anything. It could be one of at least 20 different things. Yeah.
Yep. Or 100. Here's one chart in there that goes up to 100.
Oofta. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But all right. Now let's talk about sandwiches, because sandwiches are very well loved in the show.
Uh-huh.
Especially by Jake.
So, uh-huh.
Yes. There is Jake's most delicious sandwich. So Jake is trying to, is embarking on this journey to create the most delicious of the sandwiches.
Uh-huh.
It's a fairly intensive process involving the careful bathing of vegetables, sous-viding of a steak with rosemary and thyme, blow-torching of a loaf of bread, and boiling up a lobster's soul.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Other ingredients include cream cheese, Prismo's artisanal pickles, dill, cucumber, tomato, onion, tears, bacon, diced boiled eggs, and bird from the window.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. To do all of this, Jake enters the zone. It's a very serious thing. Mm-hmm. And turns on some classical music and dances through the kitchen. The resulting sandwich glows in deliciousness and summons Magic Man, who of course immediately tries to eat this amazing sandwich.
Oh. Oh no.
Yes. And Binging with Babish tried to recreate this one too. Oh, the sandwich is huge. It is huge. Like, cannot fit in your mouth huge. I'm pretty sure he sliced it. He sliced it in half and then ended up slicing it into, like, little bites and eating it separately.
Oh, my goodness. That's wonderful.
But it has steak, lobster tail for the aioli, hard-boiled egg, Cornish game hen, bacon, and almost all this other stuff. Yes. Yes. And I also wanted to talk about Princess Bubblegum and her sandwich. She had an attempt at a, quote, perfect sandwich. Which was much more precise, a much more precise process involving magic and scientific tools.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, she's really into science. Uh-huh.
Yes. So this sandwich only has 4 ingredients, but those ingredients need a lot of finessing to be perfect. The cheese is made by spinning a cow, using a machine to cut the perfect slice. The lettuce is chosen. It's created in a lab and then chosen after being hit with a baseball bat to find the perfect piece. The tomato requires teleporting a red balloon and a jellyfish. Slice that up, chop into 3 pieces, choose one. And then magic and laser beams are used to make the bread.
The perfect scientifically sandwich. Perfect sandwich.
However, unfortunately, Princess Bubblegum does not get to try it because Cinnamon Bun absorbed it before she could. But she maintains it was the perfect sandwich.
Cinnamon Bun being an anthropomorphic cinnamon bun.
Yep.
Yep.
There you go. Uh-huh. And then here's another sandwich, the sentient sandwich, or the special sentient sandwich. In order to convince Jake and Finn to join him in playing a cowboy role-playing game, BMO, which is a sentient game-playing system.
Yeah. Like a Game Boy, basically, but sentient.
Yeah, exactly. BMO bribes them with sentient sandwiches, sandwiches that Jake claims, quote, taste alive. BMO spent over 6 hours making them, and the ingredients weren't easy to procure. And the ingredient list is excellent and is as follows.
Okay.
Okay, 1 free-range Humpty Dumpty egg. So these are eggs that have arms, legs, and a face. They roam around a ranch with each other, all these other Humpty Dumpty eggs. And they die when cracked open, revealing that the yolk has a different face inside.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
1 fine-aged cheddar man. A cube of bright orange cheddar that has a top hat and a monocle.
Okay.
Okay. Homemade ketchup. To get this, all you have to do is pour sugar into a sentient tomato and collect the vomit that follows.
Sure.
And then fresh pepper fart. This is the fart collected from the butt of a pepper grinder.
Sure.
Yep. Dance parsley. Dancing parsley with hands and feet. They're very cute. They look like hearts. Just take some of that. And then 2 slices of face bread. Bread slices with cute little faces on them. And then the resulting sandwich is one of Jake's faves. It appears to feel no pain when being eaten and emits a sentient aroma. They're cute.
They sound very cute.
Very cute. Let's eat them.
Oh, no.
Okay. And then this one. Let's discuss a Candy Kingdom delicacy, the Royal Tart, produced in the Tartorium and only served at the annual back-rubbing ceremony.
Okay.
Okay. So by all accounts, these pastries are absolutely sublime, like perhaps the most delicious treat in all of the land of Ooh. Princess Bubblegum claims that they are enough to kill for. Criminals will risk it all, even their lives, to just have a taste of these tarts.
Wow.
They kind of look like cheesecake with red syrupy, like a red syrupy middle and topping. They're very pretty.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they are quite fussy to make, and they have to be perfect. Each one is selected from thousands of rejected tarts that are, quote, full of imperfections, and then loaded up in an anti-gravity carrier to preserve their perfection, and then transported on the Royal Tart Path. The Royal Tart Toter, who looks like a gingerbread man that's led a really rough life, I'm going to say. He's got some bites missing.
Doesn't
look good.
Okay.
Is assigned with protecting these tarts from criminals and the like. However, in age, the Royal Tart Toter has become incapable of completing his duties. So Princess Bubblegum assigns Jake and Finn with the safe transport of the tarts, warning them that if they fail, she will be decapitated. However, once their task is completed, with some tarts lost on the way, she reveals she lied so that they would be too afraid to eat the tarts. and then the Royal Tart Toter appears to describe this, quote, cosmic dance of bursting decadence. It has this really beautiful and weird speech, and then it ends quite abruptly, as this show is wont to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I can't really blame PB in this instance, because Finn and Jake will probably eat whatever you have assigned them to transport. I mean,
yes, I agree.
I've also had a D&D group like that.
Yep.
Our whole goal was to transport the beer and the cheese to this other town, and one of our characters just kept eating it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right.
Anyway,
we do have some honorable mentions, because like we said, there's so many things. They're so like small in the scheme of it, but they're so funny.
They're so funny. Yes.
Yes. So I wanted to start with Softy Cheese, which is pretty much Cheese Whiz.
Okay. Canned cheese. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Jake loves it, but stopped eating it after Clarence exploded after eating too much.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's fair.
Yeah. Jake later starts eating it again, but is clearly haunted by the memory. I just love it. That's so funny and weird.
There's the bananas of the Nidosphere. So the Nidosphere is this realm where Princess Marceline, who's a vampire, is from. It's hell. It's pretty hellish. Ish. And there, demons excrete bananas, sometimes out of their ears. Like when they're feeling ill, one is punished by being made to just throw up whole bananas, like peel on whole bananas.
Oh.
Finn and Jake wake up there like in a pile of bananas, and like Jake is carrying one around, and all of the demons who see him go like, ew. And they don't know why for like two episodes. It's great. Unrelated, those are not the only bananas in the series. The law enforcement group in the Candy Kingdom is the Banana Guard. These are sentient bananas that appear to have been like cut in half the short way with popsicle stick legs. And they wear banana peel armor and have little hats that look like chocolate sauce with marshmallows, or maybe are chocolate sauce with marshmallows. I don't know.
They sound so cute.
They're pretty cute.
Maybe not as cute. There's the Crystal Gem Apple. And this is an item Tree Trunks really wants to taste.
She's sort of like an elderly elephant lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's got a really good voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So this apple grows in the evil forest, hanging from a mushroom-shaped tree, and it's protected by the Crystal Guardian. Taking a bite of one transports the eater to the crystal dimension and gives them dominion over the crystal men until the gem exits their body. Two people witnessing someone eating the crystal gem apple, it appears that they have spontaneously combusted.
Yeah, that's an upsetting episode. Tree Trunks, for a little bit of backstory there, she lives in a home in an apple orchard, and she loves apples. She bakes these apple pies for all of her friends. Finn says that it's like the best apple pie he's ever tasted. like, she's pretty into apples. And so this, like, crystal gem apple is, like, really her, like, right. her, like, Moby Dick. Also, side note about Tree Trunk's voice, I do this thing, and anyone else who's ever recorded audio may be familiar with it. When you're reading words on a page, sometimes your brain will mix up the vowels in the word that you are currently reading with the words around it. Mm-hmm. And what will happen is you'll say a whole sentence in this wacky accent completely accidentally.
Right.
And one of the ones that I do pretty frequently sounds, to me, a great deal like Tree Trunk's. And I can't do it. Like, I cannot summon her.
Right.
She just possesses me sometimes, and this happens. Yes. So I feel
heard it. I've witnessed it, listeners.
So I feel a great personal affinity with Tree Trunk's.
it's pretty good. Just all of a sudden, you're like, whoa. And now we were doing impressions. Oh, we're not? Okay.
Yeah, it's really strange. Anyway, please continue.
Yes, and speaking of really strange, let's talk about the soy people.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a food that the rainicorns eat in the place of human flesh. since humans are believed to be extinct.
Right.
Most rainicorns have never had the taste of human flesh, but soy people are supposed to have come pretty close and are apparently quite tasty.
Yeah. I guess speaking of eating people, or rather instead of eating people, there is the color red as a food, because the aforementioned Marceline, the vampire queen, does not actually drink blood. She eats the color red.
Oh, my brain is, like, short-circuiting right now.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Totally normal children's show for children.
Totally normal. There's also Super Porp, which is a brand of grape soda that predates the Mushroom War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the big nuclear war that that led to this post-apocalypse. Yeah.
Yes. The underground factory is guarded by the Super Porp dog and operated by Super Porp people. It is distributed by drones, and Jake and Finn wait at vending machines to be the ones to get first dibs. So it's mm-hmm. pretty popular.
Yeah.
You see the vending machines kind of frequently throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There's also the Everything Burrito, which is a burrito filled with pretty much every food in existence and some inedible items like a spatula. Yes, I wanted to read through all the ingredients. So I was like, this episode is already going to be long. but you can't find them online. Jake, the creator and maker of it, no surprise, ends up burying it in a grave with a sign that reads, "My Burrito." Tragedy.
Oh, yes. My burrito.
Sad. And then candy zombie flesh. Enough said.
Is that from the very first episode of the series?
I don't know. Is it the first one? Where, like, somebody eats the candy and becomes a zombie.
I know that there's zombie candy in the first episode. I can't recall other episodes that had it. So there you go.
There you go. They started off. They're like, we want you to know who we are right here,
right at the now.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to say the word math magical, and we are going to have zombie candy.
It's about, that captures a lot. Captures mm-hmm. a lot of what it is. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there is still so much stuff. It's so fun. If I highly recommend looking into it, like, if you haven't seen it, but even if you have, like, go look up these foods. They're really funny.
There's
a ton of them.
Please write into us and let us know your favorite Adventure Time related food or drink item that we missed, or just, like, your favorite food related character on there. We want to hear all about it. Actually, speaking of, before, because we do have some listener mail for you. But before we get into that, Annie, and before we get into a word from our sponsor, do you have a character on Adventure Time that you personally most associate with?
I'd have to go back and watch, but, like, immediately Well, I really like BMO.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I really like BMO. And then I like both Marceline and Princess Bubblegum, actually.
Yeah, yeah,
me
too.
I like their friendship, too.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Oh, goodness. You haven't watched Distant Lands yet, have you?
I don't think so.
Oh, heck. Okay, well, yes, their friendship is excellent. No. They wind up in a relationship towards the end of the show and in Distant Lands. Oh. It's really sweet. It's no pun intended. It's really heckin' sweet. Yay. Yeah, I feel like I get called like a Marceline type a lot because I'm a little bit goth, but like I definitely feel more like a bubblegum. Because of the science thing. I don't know. Maybe both. Maybe it really is both.
Maybe. I mean, you essentially came through when we asked about Bob's Burgers.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, let us know.
Let us know. And yes, speaking of, we do have some listener mail for you.
We do. But we will get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
We're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener mail. Let's try to remember the theme song goes. I only remember the kind of vague, like, yeah. I'm doing a gesture you can't see, but it's very happy.
I could definitely sing it for you, but we've already sung one thing from the show.
It's true.
I'm not trying to get sued today.
It's true. It's
over
true.
Adventure Time.
Not today. Maybe another day. we did have some fun with impressions in the commercial break.
Yeah. I don't know if it made it in or not. But if it did, that was Tree Trunks. If it didn't, that was not Tree Trunks. And producer, super producer Andrew said the nay.
Who is also a fan?
Yes.
Yes. Emily wrote, I've been wanting to write in for years. Oh, yay.
Oh.
After the poutine episode and recently having intense cravings for it, I decided it was finally the time.
Ah.
First off, as a former Montrealer, you guys are pronouncing poutine correctly. How I miss that mixture of crispy tender fries, melty curds, and hot savory gravy. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
In my childhood, I used to love eating it on many cold, snowy days at Canadian mall food courts.
Oh.
Believe it or not, the McDonald's version was actually my favorite, even today.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Secondly, since I am a current New Jerseyan, I'm glad that you guys brought up the Disco Fries version. Let me just say that Disco Fries annoy me to no end. Wannabe poutine. Ugh. It's just not the same when you use mozzarella instead of cheese curds. A lot of the restaurants around me don't actually use cheese curds, yet still call it poutine. Luckily, being so close to New York City, there are some pretty decent Belgian fry places that do a good job when the craving is too much. Lastly, I'm also happy that you brought up the foie gras poutine from Au Pied du Couchon, as that is probably one of the most decadent and delicious things I have ever eaten in my life. Highly recommend for the next time you visit Montreal.
Ooh.
Done. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Check yes. and check. Oh, thank you. Yeah, this all sounds so good.
I know. I want it so badly. I did manage to get scallops. I have some wild rice on the way, but I have not hit the poutine.
Okay.
Yet.
Oh, I haven't either. I didn't even think about getting scallops. I was just at the grocery store. Gosh. I also have wild rice on the way. So cool.
Yes. Yes. But I love all these thoughts all of you have about poutine. Also, some people have written in about Disco Fries, so if you're listening to this and you're like, wait a minute, we'll have some more things to say about
coming.
Disco Fries.
It's coming. Yes, yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Valerie wrote, hi, in the episode about beets, I'm not sure that Kiaja beets were mentioned, and I adore them. When you slice across them, they look like red and white bullseyes. Chiagas don't tend to bleed color, so they are nice in recipes where you want a red beet that doesn't turn everything else purple. Also, they look great in almost anything. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that word correctly. It's spelled C-H-I-O-G-G-I-A, and I'm looking at, like, an Italian pronunciation of it on Merriam-Webster right now. this is the high research and technology that we do for you, y'all. I've also seen them called like candy cane beets or something like that. And yes, they are beautiful.
Yes.
Really gorgeous.
I don't think I'd ever seen or heard of them, but Valerie sent pictures and they were just, yeah, stunning. And I don't know, another craving.
Yeah. Oh, and I really love, I'm sure that it would be difficult to get like among different seasons. But I'm kind of obsessed with the idea of creating like a totally normal, like steak and potatoes type of dinner. But with things that are like kind of like green eggs and ham, like themed, like you can make mashed potatoes out of those little purple fingerlings that is just like violet mashed potatoes.
Yes.
And like beets like this and just right, like stuff that looks completely fantastical, but is just really actually quite normal.
I love that idea, Lauren. I think I'm inviting myself to it right
now. If I actually cooked, it would be coming up very immediately.
Well, just let me use your kitchen because I promise that's never gone wrong for any of my friends before. Because I have some things for you and we could do an exchange. A weird, wacky, but totally normal dinner.
All right. Well, come along with me to the butterflies and bees.
Yes, I will. And thank you, listeners, for coming along with us.
Uh-huh.
And thanks to these two listeners for writing. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.